This is Full-Time Catholic Radio for Southeast Michigan, 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit.
Good afternoon to you. I'm Al Cresta, thanking you for joining us. I've got 2 hours here talking about the things that matter most. I'm going to spend some time talking about a major moment in American Catholic history. It's the Land O'Lakes Conference, going back to 1968, and it's been over 50 years since it occurred. It changed Catholic higher education in America. Christendom College has been fighting back against the Land O'Lakes Conference. And so we're going to talk to Sam Phillips, who is again associated with Christendom College. He's the director of admissions there and can tell us a little bit about the history, also exactly what it is that ails Catholic higher education in America. Also, looking at Canada's slippery assisted suicide slope, Charles Lewis, a Canadian journalist, will go over the 17-month-old legalized euthanasia assisted suicide regime, which is now active in Canada. We're also going to step down with Professor P.J. Hill to talk about where human rights come from. You know, there's in the field of intellectual history, there's debate about where ideas come from. It's very, it's actually a very tricky subject. But there's no doubt that the concept of moral responsibility and moral agency is rooted very much in the Hebrew concept of human beings as the image of God. And certainly it's picked up under the idea of the covenant that God has with man. It's also very present in the early church. We're going to talk about whether human rights comes from the secular Enlightenment or does it come from the Judeo-Christian tradition? And we have a whole lot more as well. But first, let's get to the headlines.
Thanks, Al. Good afternoon, everyone. This is your Avi Maria Radio News for Wednesday, November 6th. It's the Feast of St. Nicholas Tavelich. Today's news is brought to you by Charity Mobile, supporting pro-life and Catholic causes at CharityMobile.com. The Monterey County Sheriff's Office says two men who escaped from jail in Salinas have been caught. Monterey County Sheriff's Office Captain John Thornburg says the two are back in custody.
We had information that they were in the Tijuana area and they were trying to come back into the United States. We notified Border Patrol to that information that we had, and they located them trying to enter the country.
Both men were in jail awaiting trial on murder and other violent charges. They escaped on Sunday after cutting a hole through the ceiling of a bathroom, which led to a statewide manhunt. Public hearings in the House impeachment probe will start next week.
You will see throughout the course of the testimony, not only their testimony, but many others, the most important facts are largely not contested.
At the Capitol, California Democrat Adam Schiff said it's clear that President Trump tried to use Ukraine to, quote, dig up dirt on a political opponent. He called it presidential misconduct. Following Schiff, North Carolina Republican Mark Meadows says it's, quote, actually getting easier to defend the president as more transcripts of depositions are released. Meadows repeatedly stressed that Trump did nothing wrong. Transcripts, though, of veteran diplomat William Taylor's deposition shows his opening statement to investigators last month that he became increasingly alarmed about efforts to pursue Ukraine to investigate Democrats. Taylor also described, quote, a shadow foreign policy operation that was led by President Trump's personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani. Airbnb is making changes designed to make their rentals safer after a deadly party house shooting. Five people died at a party house rented through Airbnb last week. The company immediately banned party houses, but announced additional steps today. I'm C. Clark, Ave Maria, Radio News.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. A statement called the World Scientists' Warning of a Climate Emergency was signed by over 11,000 people from 153 countries. This, by the way, these kind of things don't happen by chance. These are getting that many names from that many countries lets you know there's a strong political impulse behind this. This letter warns of a climate emergency. It asks for a gradual reduction of the world's population. And it was published in the journal Bioscience just yesterday. And again, signed by actually 11,258 scientists from 153 countries. We'll look at this in more detail later in the week. But there are a few things that I wanted to bring up before, you know, people immediately start jumping around and, making accusation and counter-accusation about this. First of all, for Catholics, a lot of times when you hear this calling for limiting population, the immediate we are the immediate target of that, right? Because of our belief about every act of marital intercourse being open to the transmission of new life. Let me say, in some cases, we are the target. Many cases, we are not. There are lots of other problems around the world which don't have to, which cannot be traced back to Catholic Church teaching. You know, Humani Vitae is something which is very important in a Catholic understanding, a Catholic way of life. But in and of itself, it doesn't threaten world population growth or climate change. Why do I know that? Because I take a look at what's going on around the world, and the nations, the rich nations, the nations that have had much Christian influence, these nations are already at a declining or a flat birth rate. So actually, Humani Vitae hasn't done a darn thing to change the behavior of these countries. Second, we also have the situation where people misunderstand Humani Vitae. They see it as somehow a call to have as many children as you can. That's simply not Catholic Church teaching, and I should just read briefly from Pope Paul VI's document. With regard to physical, economic, psychological, and social conditions, responsible parenthood is exercised by those who prudently and generously decide to have more children, and by those who, for serious reasons and with due respect to moral precepts, decide not to have additional children for either a certain or an indefinite period of time. Responsible parenthood, as we use the term here, has one further essential aspect of paramount importance. It concerns the objective moral order which was established by God and of which a right conscience is the true interpreter. In a word, the exercise of responsible parenthood requires that husband and wife, keeping a right order of priorities, recognizes their own duties toward God, themselves, their families, and human society. And from this it follows that they are not free to act as they choose in the service of transmitting life, as if it were wholly up to them to decide what's the right course to follow. On the contrary, they are bound to ensure that what they do corresponds to the will of God the Creator. The very nature of marriage and its use makes his will clear, while the constant teaching of the Church spells it out. So you have, again, a statement on responsible parenthood here from Pope Paul VI, I should say Saint Pope Paul VI. And it's important for us not to allow people to claim that Catholics are not interested in responsible parenthood. We certainly are. And we are just not interested in breaking the union between love and life, right? Why is it so difficult for people to understand the Catholic teaching on this? Well, one of the reasons is Catholics themselves haven't spent a whole lot of time really understanding it. I also want to come back to something Pope Francis wrote in his encyclical Laudato Si. It always disturbs me when criticisms are thrown around regarding really anybody, but especially somebody like a pope, somebody who's seated on the chair of St. Peter. Criticisms being made of documents that have been written, teaching documents like Laudato Si, by people who haven't read the document, and assuming that they know what's in the document by the brief news reports they've heard. Laudato Si is a document which, as you remember when it first came out, we spent a lot of time on it. Laudato Si is an encyclical which is filled with many prudential judgments on the part of Pope Francis about how serious the environmental situation is in the world. Again, these are prudential judgments that he makes, and you know they should be shown the respect due the papacy. They do not require, and he himself has said those kind of statements do not require agreement. But there is a tremendous amount of material in Laudato Si which does deal with the biblical understanding of human responsibility. And that's right up his bailiwick. That is exactly what popes and bishops should be focusing on. So, for instance, in Chapter 2 of Laudato Si, we have a section called the Gospel of Creation. And he wrote, let me just read from it. Given the complexity of the ecological crisis and its multiple causes, we need to realize that the solutions will not emerge from just one way of interpreting and transforming reality. Respect must also be shown for the various cultural riches of different peoples, their art and poetry, their interior life and spirituality. If we are truly concerned to develop an ecology capable of remedying the damage we have done, no branch of the sciences and no form of wisdom can be left out, and that includes religion and the language particular to it. The Catholic Church is open to dialogue with philosophical thought. This has enabled her to produce various syntheses between faith and reason. The development of the Church's social teaching represents just such a synthesis with regard to social issues. This teaching is called to be enriched by taking up new challenges. So Pope Francis is saying, look, we've been at this a long time, and we've got a great contribution to make here. So he turns his attention then, and again, this is Chapter 2 of Laudato Si, he turns his attention to the Scriptures. And he says, without repeating the entire theology of creation, we can ask what the great biblical narratives say about the relationship of human beings with the world. In the first creation account in the book of Genesis, God's plan involves creating humanity. After the creation of man and woman, God saw that everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. Again, the key point here is that when we look at the world of matter, we look at the world that was created, we look at what's called nature, we look at what's called the environment, God looked at it too. And when God looked at it after he created, he said it was very good. He didn't say that the material world was some sort of a prison that we needed to escape from. He didn't say that the material world was raw material that we could use any way we want to get what we want out of life. No, he went on to say that this is very good, and it's connected with, its goodness is connected with the human person and the task that he gives the human person. And again, Pope Francis here writes, the Bible teaches that every man and woman is created out of love and made in God's image and likeness. And this shows us the immense dignity of each person, who is not just something, but someone. He is capable of self-knowledge, of self-possession, and of freely giving himself and entering into communion with other persons. St. John Paul II stated that the special love of the Creator for each human being confers upon him or her an infinite dignity. So notice from the beginning of his discussion, he's putting the human person at the center of it. Why? Because human beings aren't to be toyed with. Human beings have infinite worth and potential. And because, as he will go on to say, human beings have moral responsibility for the proper stewardship of the environment. The creation account, this is number 66 in Laudato Si, the creation accounts in the book of Genesis contain in their own symbolic and narrative language profound teachings about human existence and its historical reality. They suggest that human life is grounded in three fundamental and closely intertwined relationships with God, with our neighbor, and with the earth itself. According to the Bible, these three vital relationships have been broken, both outwardly and within us. The rupture is sin. The harmony between the Creator, humanity, and creation as a whole was disrupted by our presuming to take the place of God and refusing to acknowledge our creaturely limitations. This, in turn, distorted our mandate to have dominion over the earth. Notice what he's saying. He's saying, look, we had a creation, God looked upon it, and it was very good. Sin entered the world, and a great rupture occurred. There was an alienation that occurred between God and us, the human person. There was an alienation that occurred between human beings and one another. So, for instance, after the fall, Adam blames Eve, right? There's a split, there's a sociological split between the man and the woman. And there's also an alienation that grows up between the human person and this good world that God created. We were told to have dominion over the earth, Genesis 1:28. We were told to till and keep it, Genesis 2:15. And as a result, the originally harmonious relationship between human beings and nature, because of sin, becomes full of conflict, Genesis 3:17 through 19. And it's significant, he says, that the harmony which St. Francis of Assisi experienced with all creatures was seen as a healing of that rupture. St. Bonaventure held then that through universal reconciliation with every creature, St. Francis in some way returned to the state of original innocence. This is a far cry from our situation today, where sin is manifest in all its destructive power, in wars, in various forms of violence and abuse, the abandonment of the most vulnerable, and attacks on nature. We are not God. The earth was here before us, and it has been given to us. He goes on then and has a very elaborate discussion of what it means, biblically speaking, to have dominion on the earth. It's not to have domination on the earth. It's to take responsible use of the planet we are upon to properly develop it. That's where we should begin our discussion about ecology, Genesis.
Are you tired of investing in the culture of death? Would you like your investments to be in line with the Catholic Church? Would you like an advisor who is a fiduciary and who understands retirement issues while sharing and respecting your Catholic beliefs? Contact Joseph Vitale at American Retirement Advisors at 855-756-5700. Helping you preserve your retirement while preserving your beliefs and values. Call Joe at 855-756-5700.
In 2017, we filed a federal civil rights lawsuit against the city of Sterling Heights, Michigan, and its mayor, alleging violations of federal and state law. The lawsuit was filed on behalf of seven city residents who opposed the construction of a large mosque in their Chaldean Christian neighborhood. It was evident then, as it is now, that the American Islamic Community Center, or AICC, wanted to plant the flag in this community of Christians who fled Islamic persecution in Iraq. In February 2017, the city decided not to defend against the specious claims of discrimination made by AICC and the Obama Department of Justice in their lawsuits filed against the city, but instead to capitulate and enter into a consent judgment that granted AICC permission to build the mosque, even though doing so violated local and state zoning regulations. The decision to enter into the consent judgment was made during a city council meeting in which the mayor enforced a speech restriction that prohibited private citizens, including our clients, from making any comments that the mayor deemed critical of Islam in direct violation of the First Amendment. The district court ruled in favor of the city in an opinion fraught with egregious errors. A three-judge panel of the U.S. Court of Appeals affirmed on August 14th of this year. We promptly filed a petition asking the entire Sixth Circuit to take up this important case. I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel for the American Freedom Law Center, bringing you this Faith and Freedom Minute. You can learn more about the American Freedom Law Center and its fight for your faith and freedom by visiting our website and liking us on Facebook.
As we ended this particular day, as we always do, my daughter and I were chatting right before bed. She shared with me that it bothered her that a particular friend never apologizes when she does something wrong or even congratulates or acknowledges anything my daughter does well. Mom, she said, I always say sorry when I do something wrong, and I always tell my friends good job or congratulations when something good happens to them. But she never does that for me, and it really hurts my feelings. Her friend may not even know that her behavior is hurtful, so I encourage my daughter to share with her friend how that makes her feel and to pray to the Holy Spirit to guide her words. The Bible tells us that the Holy Spirit will teach us all things and guide us into all truth. This will open up my daughter to respond when someone shares with her how her behavior might be hurtful. Kids aren't born knowing how to communicate, let alone how to communicate as a Christian. We must teach them. This has been a Christ Center communication message. I'm Vanessa Denhagarmo, a communications evangelist.
Are you looking for an affordable option for your health care? You feel compelled to support pro-life efforts in our country? Then now is the time for you to join CMF Curo. CMF Curo is the country's first healthcare sharing experience that engages church teachings by offering truly pro-life healthcare. CMF Curo members experience healthcare that's ethically consistent with church teachings and rooted in Catholic community. Learn more about CMF Curo and find Catholic healthcare options at mycatholichealthcare.com.
You don't think it'll happen to you twice. First, it was a fire. My agent was right there and helped me rebuild. Then the tornado destroyed everything again. Both times, my independent agent and auto owners took care of me like someone takes care of family.
For whatever lies ahead, we're always there. Auto Owners Insurance.
For your no-obligation quote, please call Choice Insurance at 734-641-4200.
And a good afternoon to you. I'm Al Cresta. It's been pointed out by observers of Western culture for, well, actually a few generations now, but especially over the last 50 years, that we seem to be losing a sense of the sacred. It's a very busy society, a distracted society, a society in which oftentimes people are led to believe that their deepest and most sacred convictions are merely private affairs, kind of just personal, personal interests that don't have any public place of public recognition. The Catholics of America have been fighting against this as best they can in trying to retain a strong sense of the sacred. Our Mass, for instance, is intended to lift people's attention from the things of this world and remind us that we operate all under the aspect of eternity. The Benedict XVI Institute for Sacred Music and Divine Worship is a mission that has just started, trying to open the door of beauty to God. Maggie Gallagher is executive director for the Benedict XVI Institute. She also founded the National Organization for Marriage and the Institute for Marriage and Public Policy. She's the author or co-author of four books, and most recently, Debating Same-Sex Marriage. You can learn more at benedictinstitute.org. And Maggie, good to have you with me.
It's great to be with you again, Al, always. Thank you.
Well, let's talk about what's coming up in November here. I guess we're in November. November 16th in particular, with Archbishop Acorda Leon of San Francisco is going to be there offering a solemn pontifical high mass in the extraordinary form. Tell us when, where, and why.
Well, first of all, you can find out all the details and register to come for both the mass and the after conference and the book launch at massoftheamericas.com, massoftheamericas.com. But yes, it's really, I think, a moment of great cultural and spiritual significance. November 16th at the Basilica National Shrine of Our Lady of the Immaculate Conception, which is, of course, a great and iconic church for the United States. And this will be a world premiere celebration of the Mass of the Americas in the extraordinary form. And it's a very, Al, it's a really kind of amazing thing. Now, I met Archbishop Cordiglione when he was the auxiliary bishop of San Diego, and he is, someday we should go over that story, but he's as responsible as anyone for getting the Prop 8 on the ballot back in 2008 and giving the people of California a chance to affirm that marriage is one man and one woman before the high court took it away.
Right.
So, he asked me to come and help him with this struggle or this effort because he believes that a loss of the sense of the sacred, as you said, is actually the, among all of our problems, it's the worst problem facing Catholics, that we struggle to experience the miracle that is happening in the Mass, and too many people act like it's not, too many people, including people on the altar, don't really act like what an amazing miracle is taking place is happening, which makes it harder for us every Sunday to experience the reality that God is again coming down and sacrificing himself for us. And so to give us his presence here in the middle of all of our struggles.
Yeah.
But so the Mass of the Americas was, the Archbishop conceived it because last December 8th, the Feast of Our Lady of the Immaculate Conception fell on a Saturday, which is the day that in San Francisco, like most archdioceses, they actually celebrate the Feast of Our Lady of Guadalupe, which is not a holiday here in the United States. So, you know, in San Francisco, they do it with it's really kind of amazing, a 12-mile pilgrimage through the streets.
Wow.
30,000 people take place of it. They you know, Ooh. Thousands ascend on the cathedral. I watch them as they many people end their pilgrimage by marching on their knees, walking on their knees up the long aisle of the cathedral to the altar of Our Lady of Guadalupe, which is right behind the altar in San Francisco. And so it's really, and you know, they have horses and feathered dancers, and you know, it's kind of it's just a great event for the Latinos of San Francisco, which most people who are not Latino don't even know exists.
No, that's right.
So
that's right.
Yeah, right. So. This is an opportunity. What we did first in the ordinary form is take some of the hymns to Mary, the folk hymns to Mary that are cherished by the Mexican people, and with our composer, Frank LaRocca, of Composer in Residence, elevate them and bring them in conversation with the high sacred music tradition of the church.
Beautiful.
So that, yeah, it's kind of amazing because, you know, the Archbishop says it's exactly like what his vision was, that we would do with sacred music what the missionaries did with church architecture in California and Texas and the Southwest, the Franciscan missionaries, which is, if you can visualize the old mission churches that are scattered up and down in the white adobe, constructed of white adobe, they look like churches. They're clearly in the tradition, but they've taken the local material, and instead of what we've done so often after Vatican II, which is kind of bring down the Mass to the level of the culture, they integrate and elevate elements of the culture and create something that is both old and new, which is the definition of tradition, you know, the passing on.
That's right.
And we wanted to show that the church's great music is not a closed tradition. It's not a dead tradition. It has deep roots and new flowers.
Mm.
And so this, as Monsignor Pope just wrote beautifully, he said, you know, what really struck him about this is the deep reverence that the devotees of Our Lady of Guadalupe have, and the deep reverence that traditional Latin mass goers have. This is an opportunity for these really important communities in our church to come together and pray to the patroness of the United States and the patroness of Mexico and all the Americas together. And that's what is happening with the Mass of the Americas.com in Washington, D.C. on November 16th.
Mm. It sounds so important. It sounds beautiful. But it also speaks to one of the key elements of being Catholic, and that is our ability to transcend ethnic and geographic divisions and find a higher unity that links us all together.
Right. You know, politics is enormously important, and I've devoted a lot of my life to it.
Sure.
But it's not the ultimate thing.
Right.
And Mary is one of the veneration of Mary is one of the things that transcends all cultures, and she brings us to Christ, and unites us as children of God in a special way. And so we're really, I think it's going to be an amazing event. There's a conference afterwards about bringing together artists and philosopher of art. And we are also launching a new book by James Matthew Wilson, which David Dana Joya,
yeah.
told me is the future of Catholic letters in America.
Wow.
And he came to the original celebration of the Mass of the Americas and was so inspired that he wrote, I kind of thought maybe he'd be inspired to write a poem, but instead he wrote a song cycle, a small book of poems commemorating the event, which is called The River of the Immaculate Conception, and is published by Wise Blood Books.
Okay.
So it's going to be a great day, and I'm really excited about it,
yeah.
and about inspiring the next generation of Catholic creators and bringing us all closer to God.
This is coming up again on November 16th, is that right?
November 16th, MassOfTheAmericas.com.
Tell me about your work there at the Benedict Institute, Benedict 16th Institute. This is one project you're involved in. Are there other projects that you're engaged with?
No, this is really my full-time focus to help the
right
Archbishop
now.
Corleone conceive his vision. I've worked with the American Principles Project, but I found that getting this new effort off the ground, which is, it's about providing practical resources for more beautiful liturgy
yeah.
and energizing Catholic culture of the arts. And I like to say, I'm kind of new to the liturgy wars in the church, and that seemed very strange to me.
Yeah.
Like I say, people seem to have this haunting fear that somewhere someone is going to impose a Latin Mass on them without their consent.
Right.
But the Archbishop tells me marriage and liturgy, that the reason they're the subject of these symbolic wars is their most important things at this time.
That's a very good, point. Is the Archbishop, is this a major emphasis of his, given all that he has
yes.
to do? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, well, yes. He cares about this very deeply. He's chairman of the board. We talk probably on a weekly or
okay.
a biweekly basis about it. It's a major focus of his. And it comes from his belief that, truth, beauty, and goodness are the great doorways to God. They're
yeah.
attributes of God. And they're the things in our human nature that call us to go to move higher. And that of these, all of them need attention, but the church continues to do many, many good works, and we have great apologists. But beauty seems to have fallen by the wayside
yeah.
as if it were, I don't know. People think of it as a luxury item,
right.
not
right.
as a major one of the faces of God. And he thinks that in a post-rational culture,
mm-hmm.
that it is actually, it's an important way to evangelize, that there are people, and I'm probably one of them, who read themselves into the church.
Yeah.
But as Pope Benedict himself said, in the final analysis, the great apologia for the church, for Christianity, are the saints we've produced.
Right.
And the art which has grown in her
yeah.
womb.
Yeah. The beauty
for
of holiness.
For some reason, 50 years ago, about a religious culture, a faith community that has produced great art over centuries, has stopped.
Right.
And we have to reverse that.
Amen. Maggie, thank you so much. Great to hear about this. And we'll keep it in front of people on our website. And again, November 16th, learn more at MassOfTheAmericas.com. Well, hope again, Maggie. Thanks.
Bye.
We have a problem. Our culture is dying, and souls are in danger of being lost. The answer is conversion to Jesus Christ in His church. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a Catholic organization, and we have hundreds of teams spreading the good news throughout the country. But we need your help. The harvest is great, but the laborers are few. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com, a nonprofit company.
If you believe in the power of prayer, Ave Maria Radio invites you to look at their website to submit a prayer request at avemariaradio.net. Your prayer requests are shared with hundreds at the Dominican Sisters of Mary, Mother of the Eucharist, the Servants of God's Love, the Monastery of the Blessed Sacrament Cloistered Nuns, the Family of Faith Apostolate, and the staff of Ave Maria Radio. Just go to AveMariaRadio.net and click on the Community tab to submit your prayer request today.
I'm Dr. Stan Williams, and this is Facts for Christianity. There is something to be said for rejecting the political correctness demanded by social warriors and embracing instead the suffering of reality. Yes, life is full of conflict, pain, and suffering. No life has ever been different. But we have a choice. Either we descend into hopelessness, or we choose to find meaning in the rough fabric of reality. And what meaning is there? Peter wrote, "Those who suffer in the body are done with sin." Those who suffer in the body are done with sin. Will sin lead us into suffering, or will suffering lead us out of sin? Remain thankful for the strong example of Christ and the saints whose suffering faith was rooted in the facts of reality. And that's a fact for Christianity. To explore more, go to AveMariaRadio.net. Under resources, look for me, Dr. Stan Williams.
Fire on the Earth's Peter Herbeck on the diminishing influence of God on our culture and ultimately in us.
One of the reasons why the church today is not having the impact it can have and should have is we've accommodated too much to the culture. Sunday has just become another day. The whole culture has just sort of transformed it and said, hey, there's nothing special about it. Now, the world is going to do what the world's going to do. But Christians have to be wise and not be conformed to the patterns of this world. That's a pattern in this world that's destructive. It's destructive because, one, it offends God, first of all. God says, keep holy the Sabbath. Keep holy the Lord's Day. And so many people have stopped going to church. Why? Because they're just busy. Why? Doing what? Playing golf, watching sports. Jesus loves our sentiments and our feelings, but he also looks at us seriously and says, do you seek to obey my commandments? Where are my commandments in your life? Are they a burden? Are you afraid they're going to take away your fun in life and are going to ruin your weekend? Do you resist them? Or do you hunger after them? Are they a light for your path?
Peter Herbeck spreads fire on the earth weekday mornings at 6:30 and again at 11:45 on 990 Ave Maria Radio. Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at SolidarityHealthShare.org or at 844-313-4999.
And good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. For most of recorded history, societies and cultures looked at differences among peoples, and they justified those differences, they sanctioned those differences based on some understanding of nature, some understanding of divine law. People just say, well, that's just the way things are. You have, a caste system in India. Slavery was almost universally accepted, and legal distinctions based on race, gender, and ethnicity were often used to justify different types of bondage. How did the Judeo-Christian tradition help us move beyond that? Join me right now is Dr. P.J. Hill, who serves the George F. Bennett Professor of Economics at Wheaton College, there for 25 years. As a prolific scholar and much sought-after teacher and mentor, he's published much in the areas of international economics, property rights, natural resources. His has an essay on human dignity in a volume called All Fairness, Equality, Liberty, and the Quest for Human Dignity that caught our attention and is the reason we're discussing this matter with him today. Dr. Hill, good to have you with me.
Thank you. It's good to be here with you.
Oftentimes, people will say that the rights revolution or the emphasis upon egalitarianism or the dignity of the individual is a rather late development in Western history that owes much to the Enlightenment. And oftentimes, historic Judeo-Christian thinking, whether it's medieval Catholic Church or post-Reformation Protestantism, is not seen as a major contributor to the so-called rights of revolution or the movement towards universal equality and dignity. Have Christians been slow to embrace universal dignity?
Well, I think that one of the things we often forget is that there is a long history of both human inequality and then human equality. And so I see the Enlightenment important in terms that there were Enlightenment philosophers that talked about what kind of political regimes could put in place human dignity. But I see the our origins of it much earlier than the Enlightenment. So The whole rights revolution is something that is rooted in a metaphysical concept. And I think we forget how unusual it is in the long-term sweep of history to claim that there is universal human agency, that people can decide for themselves, that they have the moral right to decide. So I see it going back much further than the Enlightenment. Now, the Enlightenment is important, but it's really building upon the Judeo-Christian concept of human dignity.
In the New Testament, there's that little letter to Philemon where St. Paul tells Philemon to receive back a runaway slave, Onesimus, who has been very useful to Paul in his work. And he says to receive him back not as a slave but as a brother. That seems to imply that even in the first generation of Christianity, there was some kind of universal brotherhood that could potentially transcend slavery. Is that a right reading?
Right. Mm-hmm. That's how I read it, and I read the other things that Paul said, neither Jew nor Greek, neither barbarian or civilized, those other sorts of things, also draw up on the same metaphysical concept of people made in the image of God. And I really think it takes a metaphysical concept to overcome our natural tendency to see people that are different from us as not fully human. And so you can justify a lot of social practices on the basis of the people that I'm treating badly are not as human as I am or as my in-group is. So I regard Paul's teachings, I regard Judaism, the whole Old Testament law, as really based upon the idea of universal human dignity, which comes from the Imago Dei.
Okay, the image of God, yeah. Is the concept of the image of God something that's getting sufficient attention in the world of intellectual history these days?
Well, I think it's been forgotten. I think that in countries, in most of the West, universal human dignity or human equality is pretty generally accepted. I think we tend to look at that and say, well, that's always been that way.
right.
Yeah. People should always treat other people that way. And I think that ignores the record of history, that people have had all sorts of justifications for treating other people badly. So I would say that much of our modern political movements are based upon human dignity. You can take Black Lives Matter or the Me Too movement. I think, however, you think that they, some of the practical ways that they're worked out with, you may agree or disagree with, but they both are making claims about human dignity, human equality. I don't think that generally people go back to history and say, where did it come from?
Yeah.
And I do think it is a Jewish and Christian concept that it works its way out, takes a long time before it gets to put into political structures, but eventually it does. Still, the principle still gets violated a lot of times. Christians have been guilty of violating it at times, but nevertheless, it's just an important concept for giving us a reason to believe in people that are not necessarily like us are people of human agency and of equal dignity.
Let me move from the image of God understanding to the idea of covenant. Does this idea of covenant have much of a role to play in the moral intuitions that eventually give rise to what we call modern liberal democracy?
Right. The Jewish state or the idea of Israel under the rule of God was very different in that part of the world at that time. Most rulers claim some sort of sanction from some sort of a divine agency. So Israel was not unusual in that sense, but what was unusual was it was seen as a covenant with all of the people. It wasn't just an approval of the ruler. And most of the rulers wanted to claim that they were either divine or they had some sort of divine sanction. What was different about Israel was that the covenant, the Abrahamic covenant, was with the people. And that's a pretty unique idea, that there is a God, that he's making a covenant with people that are morally responsible. And that's, if you read through what Christians call the Old Testament, what Jews would call Holy Scripture, you see that again and again, that people are being held responsible. It's not just the rulers are held responsible when they don't do what God wants them to do, but the people themselves are held responsible, so they're treated as moral agents. And the Abrahamic covenant is with the people.
So that idea of universal moral agency or moral responsibility is really warp and woof of the biblical story.
Yes. Yeah. I would argue again. Now, it's relatively new, depending on what we mean by long term. I see it. I see it in Judaism. I see it in the what we call Old Testament Scripture. As just people being held morally responsible.
Yeah.
You go back to people like Aristotle, and he felt that certain people were morally responsible, but they were basically males who held certain class positions. Women and slaves couldn't be held morally responsible because they were a part of a class structure where they couldn't decide what they wanted to be. And then throughout history, class has pretty much defined people. And so the idea that your definition doesn't come of whom you are, doesn't come strictly from your social class, but comes from something way beyond that, is, I think, a powerful argument. And I found there are numerous intellectual historians that have made that argument, and that's a pretty revolutionary idea. Luc Ferry, a French philosopher, has said that Christianity completely changed the world in terms of how we see people. And I just think that's an important idea.
And
now, it's interesting that
Luc
Ferry is
too.
Not...
Yeah.
Well, yeah, he calls himself a secular humanist. I don't know if he would... but he certainly is not a Christian. He doesn't think, you can believe that these ideas are important and not think that it's true. I happen to believe that they're important, and I also think that they're true. But historically, people like Ferry look at the world not from a... He's not arguing as a Christian. He's arguing as an intellectual historian.
Right.
And so he says, I'm not sure this is the way the world really works, but if you want to look at history and you want to see changes, when Paul started going all around the Mediterranean world, he was preaching a very radical doctrine, because the Roman, like the Greek world, that prior to that, the Roman world did not treat people as equal, and there was no particular basis for treating people as equal, except in Judaism and in Christianity. Now, it does mean that other philosophies have adopted that over time, so many modern-day egalitarians do have what they would think of as a reasonable basis for universal human agency, but I'm not sure that they understand where that comes from. Now, people like Martin Luther King with the civil rights movement, he was very clear that from his perspective it does come from God's covenant with the people and how he made man and woman.
Right, right. What about the concept of natural law is often thought to have been abused to justify the status quo. is natural law also been used, however, to lead us to accept the idea of universal moral responsibility?
Yes, and I think that we have to go back there to the origins of where we get these sorts of ideas. And ideas can be used, they can be misplaced, in lots of sorts of contexts. And so I don't want to argue that both Judaism and Christianity have lived by the concept of right. universal human agency throughout history. I mean, we have been guilty of violating it. And one of the interesting questions is, why didn't Paul speak out? Why didn't he just condemn slavery outright?
As an activist, yeah. Yeah.
Right, but he, in some sense, was giving a message for how you would act within the social structures of the time.
Here, let me thank you for being with me today. It's very helpful, and I hope we can talk again.
Okay, thank you for having me on.
Dr. Peter Hill is contributed to the volume In All Fairness, Equality, Liberty, and the Quest for Human Dignity, published by the Independent Institute. I'm Al Cresta.
Regina Chaley Academy presents the 6th Annual Priest Talent Show Gala with guest MC Father Leo Paddlinghung of Plating Grace. This year's Priest Talent includes Father Jim Lowe of the Companions of the Cross and Pastor of St. Scholastica, as well as Father Joe Lang, Associate Pastor of the Shrine of the Little Flower. Join them and others on Friday, November 15th at 6 p.m. at the Ukrainian Cultural Center in Warren. For details, visit rcahybrid.com. That's rcahybrid.com.
Father Larry Richards spoke to the men's group at St. Patrick's Church in Brighton, Michigan.
Bring the kingdom of heaven, not out there, but in here. But that'll cost you your life. Christianity in these last 20, 30 years have become wimpy for men. You know, you become effeminized. You know, we make Jesus, Jesus was so nice and gentle. And we picture him tiptoeing through the tulips. You know, it is la-la. But Christ was a man who laid down his life. Who said, I'm going to have to suffer and I'm going to have to die. And if you and I are going to follow him, we're going to have to suffer and we're going to have to die.
This is Henry Richt, your host for Putting On the Mind of Christ. Father Larry Richards came from Erie, Pennsylvania to Brighton, Michigan to talk to the men's group meeting at St. Patrick's Church. We'll hear his mass homily and talk on our next program. Listen to Putting On the Mind of Christ this Sunday afternoon at 3 on 990 WDEO, 1440 WMAX, and AveMariaRadio.net on the Internet.
Are you looking for an affordable option for your health care? You feel compelled to support pro-life efforts in our country? Then now is the time for you to join CMF Curo. CMF Curo is the country's first healthcare sharing experience that engages church teachings by offering truly pro-life healthcare. CMF Curo members experience healthcare that's ethically consistent with church teachings and rooted in Catholic community. Learn more about CMF Curo and find Catholic healthcare options at mycatholichealthcare.com.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Crist, and I thank you for being with me. Let me remind you that all that we talk about on this program can be followed up on by going to AveMariaRadio.net. Go to the Crist Guest Archives. More information there on the upcoming Mass of the Americas. Remember, it's November 16th. It's being conducted by the Benedict 16th Institute. That's coming up in Washington, D.C. But, again, it's a beginning of a movement to focus in on the beauty of holiness. We've done a lot of work in the area of apologetics and bioethics and moral reasoning. We've done a lot less thinking about the role that beauty plays in wooing us into union with Christ. Also, coming up next hour, we're going to talk with Charles Lewis, who's a journalist from Canada. He's been watching, actually he's been an opponent of assisted suicide since 2007, and he's been watching with great interest the 17-month-old euthanasia and assisted suicide policies that we see in Canada now. It's those policies have been praised as a model of restraint and balance, but it's now moving towards a major expansion. We're going to talk with Charles about that. Also coming up in the next hour, Sam Phillips, who's director of admissions for Christendom College, will be joining us. He's been there since 2014, and Christendom College has a unique background. It came out fighting. It recognized that Catholic higher education after the Land O'Lakes Conference in 1968 was moving in a direction which would lead to its secularization, and it would no longer be in the position, overall, it would no longer be in the position of fighting for the faith. And so Christendom College really was birthed from that concern. We're going to talk with him about what's going on at Christendom College and about Catholic higher education in general. So be with me. We've got another hour ahead of us. I'm Al Cresta.
This hour of Cresta in the Afternoon is co-produced by Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.